We've been searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
It doesn't get any easier as the season moves on. Road games get tougher and tougher.
There's not an easy answer to that.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at tsn1290.ca, we welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this beautiful Saturday morning. Not really that beautiful outside, to be perfectly honest. Little gray, little cloudy, little rainy. Is that going to affect your golf game upcoming at Bell Acres this afternoon there, Ezzy?
No, absolutely not. We go out there rain or shine.
Rain or shine. I've seen your game. It really doesn't make a difference if it's raining or not at that point in time. The only difference is, I guess, is how wet you're going to be. But the ball just, 300 right down the middle, just the doesn't matter rain or shine for you. Right there, buddy? There you go. Anyways, good morning. As I said, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. Gentlemen, good to see you both on this morning. We already heard from Ezzy. Dave, good to see you. How are you doing on this Saturday morning?
I'm doing well. I've been fringing it up in the last couple of days.
You can follow all of Dave's fringe activities on his Twitter feed, at ICDave.
Yeah, I just think it's a fun festival that people should be taking advantage of.
It is. In fact, it's such a fun festival. We're going to be speaking to a fringe performer at the last segment of today's show, the star of the show. It's a Monster Theater production. That's the production company. It's Hockey Night at the Puck and Pickle Pub. Say that 10 times fast. You saw that show last night and enjoyed it. So we're going to be speaking with Ryan Gladstone of Monster Theater Production later on in the program. It's July. It's the summer. It's a little bit of a sleepy season. We're okay. We can sort of go off the beaten path of the hockey world on this Saturday morning.
Well, speaking of that, Drew, I have to wish you good luck. Because as many people know, Michael Phelps is going to be racing a shark tomorrow as part of Shark Week. And you're going to be racing Gary Lawless as part of Steak Week.
How long you been thinking about that one for?
About a couple minutes.
Okay, that was very clever there. I didn't know that Michael Phelps is racing a shark tomorrow. Isn't a shark's going to win that, right?
Yeah, you'd think so. Although he will be wearing one of those bodysuit things, with a giant fin.
It also depends if Michael Phelps is.
Hang on, is that? I can't tell if that's sarcasm.
No, I'm serious. He's wearing some swimmers sometimes have these.
Well, they wear a bodysuit.
Yeah, he's bodysuit man. So he'll be wearing one that has a flipper at the back. I'm not joking. It's aerodynamic. It makes him faster.
Okay, so it's not really a...
Essentially, it's removing his... He's becoming a merman.
Well, and as far as Drew and Lawless goes, they're just going to each have a fork.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It's like the old 72-ouncer from John Candy's movie, Great Outdoors.
What steps are being taken to prevent Michael Phelps from being eaten by the shark?
Well, I assume this simultaneous thing will be done virtually as opposed to...
Well, it's all contained.
In the water, but I generally don't watch that, so I have no idea.
I'll tell you what, I'd watch it if they were actually racing each other, next to each
other. I think I'd rather watch you and Gary Lawless eat steak.
Let's get into it. We start, of course, with the Winnipeg Jets, as we do each and every week here on this program. Not a lot going on in the world of the Winnipeg Jets this week. So, it was a good opportunity to take a little bit of a step back and look at what the Jets have done this offseason thus far. And really what they've done is they've added three players to the team on one-way contracts. We know the longest-term deal they handed out went to Dmitry Kulikov. He got the big 3-year contract from the Winnipeg Jets to play on the left side of their defense. Steve Mason came in to shore up the goaltending. He gets that 2-year deal. And then Michael Scarbosa, he gets a 1-year contract. It is a one-way deal, but nobody would be surprised to see if he ended up playing with the Manitoba Moose. But, in the interests of equality, he did get a one-way contract as well. So the question I pose to you guys on this Saturday morning is, if no further moves for the Jets, now assume that they get Connor Hellebuyck under contract, because I think we all agree that's going to happen. There's not going to be a holdout situation there. Assume that this is it for the Winnipeg Jets this offseason. Have they done enough? Are you satisfied with their offseason if this is it?
I'm personally satisfied, and the answer to that question, Drew, really isn't going to be available until probably next April, right? whether or not the Jets make the playoffs, that's when we're going to know if they made enough moves in the offseason, really. I mean, you can't answer that question definitively right now, but going into the offseason, the biggest needs for the Jets were a number one goaltender and an upgrade on the left side of the defense. And Kevin Cheveldayoff went out and acquired Steve Mason, as you mentioned, and went out and acquired Dmitry Kulikov, which upgrades them on the left side of their defense. So in that sense, they have accomplished their biggest needs. Now, the question is, are those moves the right moves? Is the goaltending going to be good enough to get them into the playoffs? Is the defense going to be better? The Jets scored the seventh most goals in the league last year, but they gave up the fourth most, right? So the biggest problem for the Jets last year was keeping the puck out of their own net. Now, I think Dmitry Kulikov, even though I think there were better defensemen out there that they could have acquired, not on the free agent market, more so on the trade market, I think he makes them better. Now, I think a healthy Tyler Myers plays a key role in that. He only played 11 games last year. They need him to be healthy, and they need internal improvements. If you look at the reason why the Jets had so much success offensively last year, it's because Mark Scheifele had a career year. Nikolai Ehlers had a career year. Brian Little's point totals went up. Adam Lowry's point totals went up. Blake Wheeler was one of the only players whose point totals went down last year. So internal improvements are going to be a big part of it too, Drew. But as far as the moves go, he addressed the goaltending issue by bringing in Steve Mason, and he addressed the left side defense by bringing in Dmitry Kulikov. But as far as were these moves enough, really, the proof is going to be in the pudding, and that pudding, or the proof is going to be whether or not the Jets make the playoffs next year.
I thought you were going to start talking about pudding there for a minute, to be perfectly honest. I thought maybe you were participating in a pudding eating contest or something. What, you're participating in the pierogi eating contest, though, right?
I believe I am, yes.
Yes, okay. That's right before your wedding. I just want to make sure, you know, a couple weeks before your wedding, you're going to be eating pierogies at a long-term basis. Anyways. Dave, your thoughts? Have they done enough this offseason? Is this a are you satisfied, you know, with the performance of the Jets front office, with the additions they brought to the team?
Yeah, I mean, they did, and they, you know, there was a subtraction. Obviously, they removed Mark Stewart's contract from the books with the buyout of Mark Stewart, and they've solidified their goaltending, which, as he's touched on, is one of their biggest needs, and they've also done that on the left side because, you know, they're banking on Kulikov coming back and having a Florida-esque season as opposed to a Buffalo-esque season for them. And that, you know, the interesting aspect of that is a lot of the pundits kind of really ripped on that that move. And but the interesting thing to me is that Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele are working out with Kulikov, and they kind of promoted him to the team. So to me, that you know, the players kind of helped make that decision in terms of bringing this player in, having a comfort with him, and seeing a value in bringing him in. And as Ezzie just talked about, and I think probably the most critical factor is a healthy defensive core. Because if you've got a healthy Tyler Myers and you've got a healthy Tobias Enstrom, you know, really reducing their minutes really can make them, I think, more effective. And it really just kind of provides the Winnipeg Jets with a strong, really strong defensive core, again, based on good health, which obviously, as we know, isn't a guarantee in the NHL. But, I mean, the offense is there. That's not a problem for Winnipeg, as he touched on. So now if they've been able to address what I think are their biggest needs, because let's be realistic, if the Jets had, it's not only on the goaltending, but as we know, if the Jets had a solid enough backup last year to have gotten them the points, they probably would have been a playoff team. So that they've addressed those two issues apparently, and that should really make a big difference for them, I think.
And special teams is going to play a big part as well. I mean, the Jets have to take less penalties. The PK and the power play has to be better. I mean, these are things, guys, we've been talking about for the last 2 or 3 years now. So, I mean, you could get better goaltending, but the penalty kill could come back to bite you as well. We know that the Western Conference has gotten better since last year. Dallas is better, specifically, and they didn't make the playoffs. So Winnipeg's going to be competing with Dallas, among other teams in the Central Division, for that last playoff spot. Mm-hmm. Or we believe the Jets aren't going to win the division next year, right?
That would be an improvement that I don't think anybody is banking on.
Right. So, I mean, the Jets have to get better in those areas as well. But when you're talking about what the Jets needed, and we already just touched on this, they needed to improve the goaltending, needed to improve the defense. They've done that. Now, to what degree that they've done that, that's the biggest question. I don't have the answer to that. I mean, I think the goaltending is going to be much better. I mean, Steve Mason, put it this way, Drew, if the Jets are relatively healthy and Steve Mason puts up a 915 or 920 save percentage, I think the Jets have a really good shot of making the playoffs. I really do. I mean, they're a top 10 offensive team. There's no reason to believe that can't improve even when you consider that a lot of these players are going to be older, like Nikolai Ehlers, Patrick Laine, and others. And then you throw in a guy like Kyle Connor, who could, you know, chip in 20 goals potentially on your second or third line. So I think when you're talking about the Jets, the biggest question mark is how well do they play as a defensive group? And, you know, Dmitry Kulikov is a guy that he could be a second-pairing defenseman for them. He could be a third-pairing defenseman for them. But if you have Toby Enstrom and Tyler Myers playing on your third pair, then you probably shouldn't be in the bottom five in the NHL in goals against.
I think that's a reasonable point. So that's the here and now about the roster for next season. One of the other sort of priorities that I think Jets fans maybe placed this offseason was getting something done, getting in terms of a contract extension for a guy like Brian Little or a guy like Jacob Trouba. If, you know, training camp rolls around and we're really only, you know, let's say 6 weeks away from training camp, maybe 7 weeks away from training camp at the most. If nothing's done with Little and Trouba and they're entering the regular season, one as a potential UFA, one as a still an RFA. Is that something that's sort of an area of concern for you as we enter the 2017-18 season?
I don't think it's an area of concern for me. It's an area of concern for Chevy, right?
Well, I meant for you as a Jets analyst or for a Jets fan who's listening right now.
I think Trouba is a bigger concern. I think everybody knows that the Jets want to sign Brian Little long-term, and Brian Little said last year, Dave, that he wants to stay in Winnipeg, which could be for the rest of his career, right? When you're talking about a five-year deal, maybe not the rest of his career, but that's going to take him to 35 years old. That's most likely going to be, you know, the majority of the rest of his career, right? When you're talking about Jacob Trouba, we've talked about it. We don't know if he wants to remain here. He said last year that one of the reasons why he didn't want to be here was because of usage. He's got that. He's now the number one right shot defenseman on the team. He played 25, 26 plus minutes a game. Paul Maurice definitely had more confidence in Jacob Trouba than he's ever had. But as far as his future, I mean, if you're asking most Jets fans, they'll say, yeah, lock Trouba up to 6 or 7 years, right? You're not going to get a lot of arguments as far as that goes, but really it lies with Jacob Trouba, him personally. Does he want to stay here? As far as Brian Little goes, I think there is going to be concerns, you know, 2 or 3 years down the road when guys like Nikolai Ehlers and Patrick Laine are on their second contracts and making $7-8+ million a year, especially Laine. Ehlers will probably be around 6 or 7, but I think you're going to run into problems with cap management. But as far as Brian Little's want to be here and the Jets wanting to keep him here, I think there's no question. So I don't think Little is as big of a concern, but when you're talking about Trouba, I mean, that's the big unknown.
I would say, like, I agree with Ezzy. I think Trouba is the biggest factor because like he has had a trade request. Now he's rescinded the trade request, but, you know, does he ultimately want to stay in Winnipeg? And as Ez touched on, Winnipeg gave him everything he wanted, everything he asked for. So the question now becomes, does he want to make Winnipeg his home for potentially the next 6 to 7 or 8 years? Whatever it is, he has to make that decision, because I would imagine the term is going to be there from the Jets, and I would imagine the money is going to be there from the Jets. You know, and I'm not saying the Jets are just going to back up a dump truck and just give him everything he's asking for. They're obviously going to negotiate with him. They're going to use comparables. But they're obviously wanting him to be here for the long term, to be part of that core with Josh Morrissey, you know, and all this glut of young talent that they have at forward. So I really think, you know, obviously you can't afford, especially when you're, quote, a draft and develop team like Winnipeg, to lose your first round pick from 2012. So I Trouba is obviously the most important factor. With Brian Little, I was going to say, the to me at least, the biggest question is, there's no doubt in my mind that Brian Little is a great center. And again, an underrated center. We've talked about that forever on the show. But I think the key is, who do you have to replace Brian Little? And Jack Roslovic is excellent. Jack Roslovic is going to be a very, potentially, I mean, I can't 100% say this with certainty, but he's going to be a very good center in the NHL. But the truth is, he's not ready. He's a young player. He's, you know, just finished his first pro season in the AHL. So the fact is, I think he still needs some seasoning. And the reality is that you're probably going to have to give Brian a little bit longer term than you want. But I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing if you could bring Jack Roslovic in a little slower, probably on the third line center role, and then allow him to kind of move into that second line center role.
That's a lot of good questions left for the Jets, and how they're going to play out the rest of this offseason. As I mentioned at the start of the segment, it was brought to you by Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, official golf course of Legal Curve Hockey. Bell Acres offers an 18-hole championship golf course that golfers of all levels can enjoy. For more information or to book a tee time today, visit bellacres.com. We want to send you to Bell Acres to play a round of golf. So right now, text Truba to 129090. One more time, text Truba, T-R-O-U-B-A, to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply, and we'll pick out a lucky winner to win two passes to Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. One more time, Truba to 129090. When we come back, we look at the existing free agent market and see if there's any players who can help your favorite NHL team. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Steal by Vanek, sets up Bukestad. Takes a shot, knocked down. Bukestad from Vanek, score! And the Panthers get the game tied.
I think Thomas Vanek will get it. Went off of him. But then again, that's more because of where he is all the time.
Veteran unrestricted free agent Thomas Vanek. That was a goal he scored last season when he was a member of the Florida Panthers. He's a guy at this stage of his career accustomed to jumping from team to team, often more than one team in a season. He's usually signed and then oftentimes traded at the trade deadline, as teams are always looking for an offensive punch, and that's something that Vanek can provide. We're going to spend this segment looking at some of the remaining unrestricted free agents that are on the market in the NHL. A lot of them are veteran players like Thomas Vanek, and perhaps if you have a Thomas Vanek jersey and you want to get that customized, you can check out our friends at Keener Jerseys, as they are known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. Check out their showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburn. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. That's our good friends at Keener Jerseys. So we're talking about unrestricted free agents, veteran unrestricted free agents at this stage in his career. I mentioned Vanek right off the top. Last year, he made $2.6 million. He's been a 20-goal guy in the NHL 9 different times. Can play either side on the wing. Power play guy, you know, can be a power play specialist, but also play some even strength minutes. You know, is there a market, will a market develop for Thomas Vanek, as we have seen sort of year after year, probably a one-year deal somewhere in the NHL?
Yeah, I think for Thomas Vanek specifically, Drew, there is still a market for him. He scored 17 goals last year. I think in the right situation, he can score 20 goals again. So I think Thomas Vanek is a good candidate for a PTO, professional tryout offer. And I think when you're talking about a lot of these remaining UFAs guys, that's what you're looking at. So Cody Franson, for example, has been linked to the Chicago Blackhawks. There was a report out of Chicago that he might be a candidate for a PTO, you know, a good third-pairing right-shot defenseman. Cody Franson, people forget, is only 29 years old. Good size, can still move the puck, can still provide a little bit offensively. But Vanek is probably at the top of that list, Drew. He's been linked to going back to the Detroit Red Wings. We talked to Craig Custance last week about Thomas Vanek. I mean, Thomas Vanek, at this point in his career, you're looking at probably, I don't know, $1.5 million, $2 million. Michael Camilleri signed with the Los Angeles Kings for $1 million on July 1st. So if a guy like Michael Camilleri, who still got some offensive upside at 35 years old, is signing for $1 million, I don't think Thomas Vanek can ask for much more than $2 million a year.
Well, so do you think he actually gets a full one-year deal, or do you think he gets a PTO, as you mentioned sort of in the start of your answer?
Yeah, it'll be one of the two, right? And when you're talking about Vanek, he's probably a better candidate to get a one-year deal. Or, Drew, when you're talking about guys like Jágr or Iginla, those guys aren't going to get PTOs. Those guys are going to get one-year contracts, most likely.
Sure. We spoke about Jágr and Doan and Iginla last week, so we're going to sort of leave them out of the picture, but sorry for interrupting you there.
No, it's okay, Drew. And when you talk about, you know, speaking of Drew, a guy that's still out there is Drew Stafford. And, you know, Drew Stafford was obviously a guy who was traded by the Jets, and, you know, he had a little bit of success playing with the Boston Bruins, but he's a guy, for me, at 31 years old, you get him on a PTO, or you get him on a one-year, maybe $2 million deal, you know, he could provide depth on the third or fourth lines. There are players out there that aren't guys in their late 30s or early 40s. You look at guys like Alex Chiasson or Dwight King. I mean, these guys are 25, 26 years old, and yes, guys like Chiasson and King our third or fourth line guys, but these are the types of guys that can score 10 to 15 goals and provide somewhat of a physical element, especially when you're talking about Dwight King, right? Mm-hmm. So there are some good remaining UFAs out there, but when you're talking about some of the older players and some of those older defensemen, whether it's a Mark Streit or a Johnny Oduya, I mean, you're going to have to find the right situation, and I think those guys are a better candidate for a PTO. But right now, guys, we're 3 weeks into free agency or over 2 weeks into free agency, and not all of these players are going to be signed. And as far as the Jets go, I don't think most of these players are candidates for the Jets. Another guy I wanted to throw in there too, Drew, is Daniel Winnick. Daniel Winnick is a guy who plays center, can play penalty kill, win faceoffs, mm-hmm. kind of a power forward type. He hasn't signed either. So, again, we're not talking about, you know, the greatest players. We're not talking about superstars right now. But when you're talking about guys like Daniel Winnick or Drew Stafford or Cody Franson, I mean, these are still serviceable NHL players.
Dave, any of these sort of remaining unrestricted free agents jump out to you as a guy that you would sort of circle as, hey, this is a guy I think that my team should have some interest in, whatever your team may be in this instance?
No, I think that there's probably mutual interest between the Nashville Predators and Mike Fisher to get something done. You know, if he decides to return for another year, there's mm-hmm. been talk of potential retirement with him. But I think they saw what they had in him as they went to the Stanley Cup Finals. And, I think he's 37, so he's obviously at the tail end of his career, but he's still got a lot done for the Nashville Predators in their quest for the Stanley Cup last season. And, you know, one interesting note about Drew Stafford and what I was reading from the Minneapolis Star Tribune is that there's potentially interest in him from the Minnesota Wild. So potentially Jets fans could be seeing Drew Stafford return to the Central Division, obviously not with the hometown team, but with a rival they see quite often. And that's pretty much it from this list, Drew. I mean, you know, the truth is that there's a lot of players that are still left, as Ez just talked about, but the truth, again, is that most of them will kind of wait in the wings as teams try and figure out what their cap situation is because, you know, as we touched on the last segment, you know, teams like the Jets, for example, are still trying to figure out contract situations like with players like Brian Little and Jacob Trouba, and that really does factor
Hellebuck.
In. Hellebuck. And Connor Hellebuck, of course, who I think is slated for arbitration as of August 1st. So you do have a number of players who have to kind of, or that you have a number of teams that are still trying to resolve their situations. Even Minnesota has a number of players they have to get under contract first, probably before they can figure out how much money they have available for Drew Stafford. So I think for veteran players, they're prepared to wait at this point in their careers, and they know that there most likely will be that one-year deal for them waiting from a team that looks that needs to add that sort of depth, whether it be at forward or on defense.
The one name that jumps out to me, this is a guy who still put up good numbers last season for the Montreal Canadiens, and certainly he's up there in age. He's, you know, 38 years old. That's Andrei Markov. He still had 36 points last year, and I know that, you know, he's certainly probably lost a step, but I think Andrei Markov can still contribute on the back end for a lot of teams in the league. And, you know, 36 points is nothing to ignore, especially coming from a defenseman at this point in their career.
Yeah, and you're talking about one of the best Russian-born defensemen of all time, right? And I agree with you, Drew. He might be 38 years old, but he has said through his agent, which is, by the way, former Leaf Sergei Berezin, he has said that he wants to play two more years. So I think right now, Markov and the Montreal Canadiens, from what I've read, are between term, and Andrei Markov's camp wants 2 years, and I think Montreal would be more comfortable signing him to a one-year deal, but I think they're waiting to see what Montreal wants to do, because you have to believe that other teams would love to sign him, right? Andrei Markov at this point in his career is not a top-pairing defenseman. He's most likely a second-pairing defenseman on a good team, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you're talking about Markov, though, you mentioned 36 points. I mean, the guy can still contribute on the power play, and his skating is still good enough. Again, I think this ties in well to guys like Jaromir Jagr, Shane Doan, Jerome Iginla. These guys keep themselves in very good shape. It's not like these guys are overweight or, you know, they're not in hockey shape anymore. These guys are top-performing athletes, right? And Markov is the same. He keeps himself in really good condition.
Mm-hmm.
So I agree with you. I don't think he's done, and I do believe that he is going to remain with the Habs.
I mean, he played just under 22 minutes a game average time on ice last season. I mean, that's nothing to... It's hard to find guys like that, you know, veteran or not veteran, that are just available and all they cost you is money. So I'm a little surprised that, sure, he might have, you know, put a pause on negotiations, or he might be waiting to see how the Montreal situation plays out. But, you know, I would be surprised if there's not a lot of interest in him from a lot of the other teams in the league, even playing in a second or, you know, third pairing role. he can do it. He can be one of the. If he was a third pairing defenseman, he's probably one of the best third pairing defensemen in the NHL.
Yeah, I think he can still be a second pairing defenseman, Drew. But your point is well taken. And when you're talking about Markov and the Montreal Canadiens, they've already lost Mikhail Sergachev this year. They've lost Nathan Beaulieu. Can you afford to lose Andrei Markov now, right? And I realize they've brought in Carl Alzner, but I just think that Montreal has to sign him.
I would agree with you that Montreal should be certainly one of the teams that are most interested in getting him under contract. You mentioned another defenseman, a lot of ties between Cody Franson and the Chicago Blackhawks. The Blackhawks are a team that is, they've sort of retooled their lineup this offseason, and defense, you know, an area that they probably need an upgrade, or they need some more depth in the back end after trading out Nicholas Chalmerson. So, you know, Franson sort of fits their bill as a puck-moving defenseman.
Yeah, and, you know, by the way, Drew, you know, you look ahead to 2018 and some of the top free agents, I don't think much is going to change. And I realize that, you know, people were getting excited, you know, about the potential of John Tavares being a UFA next year or Carey Price being a UFA. Obviously, that's not going to happen because Carey Price signed the 8-year contract. But this is the type of free agent market that we're going to have, guys, next year. Kevin Shattenkirk was the number one UFA. I don't think that you're going to have a generational player or a number one center become available next year. I mean, you're looking at the list of guys next year. There's guys like James Van Riemsdyk or Kyle Turris or Evander Kane could potentially be a UFA. But you're talking about kind of 2B players, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when you talk about this, I don't think it's a trend that's necessarily going to change going ahead to the summer of 2018. But Cody Franson, again, you're talking about guys that can still contribute to a team. These aren't guys that are going to be 7th or 8th defensemen, in my opinion. When you're talking about Chicago, they've only got 3 veterans on defense, right? Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook, and who am I missing here? Connor Murphy.
Connor Murphy, who they acquired from the Coyotes.
Jarmolson's not there anymore.
No,
so
no.
When you're talking about the Hawks, you add a guy like Cody Franson to kind of, you know, solidify the rest of your decor there. It makes sense. So I think when you're talking about these veteran forwards and defensemen, some of these guys are going to get signed. There's going to be the odd guy that maybe doesn't get picked up and has to wait a little bit longer. Maybe some of these players decide to go to Europe. But, you know, the summer is still young enough that I think a lot of these guys are going to find contracts or PTOs.
When we come back, Lou Korak joins us. Lou is the St. Louis Blues correspondent for NHL.com. We touch base with him about the Blues offseason thus far. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour here on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Legal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text 1290. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news, that's illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program Lou Korak. Lou is our very good friend. He covers the St. Louis Blues for NHL.com. Lou, good morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Lou. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Winnipeg Jets Central Division rival there in St. Louis, as these two teams are certainly going to meet more than once, more than twice, more than thrice in the upcoming 2017-18 NHL season. You look at the Blues season last year, and you know there was sort of a season of upheaval, and then they hit their strides towards the end of the season after the coaching change, and then they went in and they sort of upset the Minnesota Wild in the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs. Where is this Blues team in terms of, let's say, contenders in the NHL? Are they a team that's on the upswing, or are they a team that's sort of in the middle, fighting, yet not sure, you know, what their ceiling is or what their floor is?
I think it's a little bit of both right now, but I would probably tend to lean more towards on the upswing now because they continue to follow that mantra of, you know, building from within, building with younger players, and kind of going in the direction of where the league is going right now with, you know, younger, faster players, maybe to a certain extent, you know, using a little bit of size, not as much as they have been in the past, but certainly going younger and faster. And I just think that's where kind of the league is going here and trending, and it's a question mark right now. You just don't know because it's kind of hard to measure up to you know, what the rest of the league has done, in particular what the rest of the teams in the Central Division has done. I mean, Dallas has obviously improved itself with obviously hiring Ken Hitchcock and bringing in some, you know, more notable free agents in the big trade with Mark Methot. So they're going to be better. We know the Jets finished strong last year, and I don't think anybody wanted to. If the Jets happened to get into the playoffs last year, I really don't know if anybody wanted to play them the way they were going. I mean, that team was full of confidence. And, you know, the rest of the teams in the division are obviously going to have a chip on their shoulder, especially Chicago, you know, losing in the fashion that they did to Nashville. And I don't think Nashville's going to go away either. So Minnesota's another one that's going to have a chip on its shoulder, too. So it's kind of hard to tell right now, but I would tend to put them a little bit more on the upswing, but I think the early going is really going to tell because of a few of the changes that they have made, and obviously most notably bringing in Braden Schenn onto the team, I think is really going to be a big help for this group.
Lou, obviously the big news coming out of St. Louis this week was Colton Parayko signing the five-year contract. What were your thoughts on that contract extension?
I think it's a win-win for both sides. I probably would have been looking, if I'm the Blues, maybe a little bit more term, just for the simple fact of you get to lock the player up and have him under team control for a few more of his unrestricted free agent years. But I certainly think it is good term and it's good value as far as the AAV at $5.5 million. I was kind of projecting it myself to maybe be in the $5 million range for a floor to about a $6.5 million range as far as the ceiling is concerned. So, you know, obviously he's going to be a big part of this team moving forward. Doug Armstrong made that crystal clear at the end of the year that, you know, signing Parayko is going to be a top priority. I think that's the biggest reason why you saw that the Blues weren't real active on any of the big names that were out there in unrestricted free agency, because they had obviously you know, save some cap space for what they were going to have to offer Parayko. And I think they got him in at a good value there. And, you know, he'll be 29 when he becomes an unrestricted free agent. So that's another area for him that he's going to get to look forward to if he continues to progress and grow the way he has in the 2 years that he's played. You know, he could cash himself in once again in 5 years. That is, if, you know, obviously the teams don't come to maybe some sort of an agreement down the road on a perhaps another extension there. So, you know, I don't want to call him a cornerstone defenseman yet. That may be placing a little bit too much pressure on him, but if he continues to grow in the fashion that he has, he averaged over 21 minutes a game and, you know, formed a pretty good tandem there with another young defenseman in the system with Joel Edmondson. They formed a pretty good second D pair there. And now with Alex Pietrangelo and Jay Bouwmeester, I think the Blues feel comfortable, especially with their top four, you know, on the blue line. They'll match that group up against anybody in the league.
Lou, one player everybody's familiar with here in Winnipeg is Chris Thorburn, who signed a two-year deal over in St. Louis now. What kind of role do you anticipate him playing for the Blues? And do you think Mike Yeo's relationship with Chris going back to their Pittsburgh days will have any effect in, you know, in the fact that he was brought in to play for the Blues for 2 years?
I think there's some obviously the familiarity there was one of the reasons why they went and looked at him. You know, nobody's going to replace what Ryan Reeves brought to this team. And, you know, obviously, you know Reeves well there being a Winnipeg native. And he's somebody obviously that was coveted by, look, the two-time defending Stanley Cup champion. I mean, they wanted him for a reason. You know, they want him there to protect the Sidney Crosby and were willing to give up a number one draft pick in order to get him. So that just speaks volumes of Ryan and the value that the Penguins praised on him. But I don't think anybody's expecting Thorburn to come in and replicate what Reeves brings you, because, you know, the Blues were using him in sort of different roles last year. And I think that's a credit to Ryan Reeves for the dedication that he put himself into to be able to become more of a complete player and somebody that they can value in more than just that enforcer role. But, you know, they're going to just expect Chris Thorburn to be Chris Thorburn. Look, I mean, you can't expect him to be somebody else. Just go out there and, you know, make yourself known. Be known that you know, your top players are not going to be somebody that the opposition is going to get a chance to push around without any repercussions. So, and we know that Chris Thorburn's a guy that is not going to shy away from that. So they felt like they needed to replace that element. They didn't feel like they had that within the system, so they went out and got him. But I think, like you mentioned earlier, his relationship with Mike Yeo enabled them to do their homework and due diligence on what they were going to bring in here, and he was the guy that they felt like was a perfect fit.
Lou Korak is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Lou is the NHL.com correspondent for the St. Louis Blues. Lou, you mentioned him in an earlier answer in passing. That's Braden Schenn. He was acquired at the NHL draft from the Philadelphia Flyers in exchange for Jori Lehterä, a first-round pick that the Blues had previously acquired from Washington, and a conditional 2018 draft pick. You know, what was it about Braden Schenn's game that made him so appealing to Blues general manager Doug Armstrong, and how do you think the Blues are going to deploy Schenn as a centerman or on the wing upcoming season?
Well, I think you have to look at the fact that he's just 25 years old and coming off of arguably his two best seasons in the NHL, where he combined for 51 goals. And obviously people are going to point at his power play numbers as something that is something that sticks out, and obviously it does. And, you know, there was made mention that, you know, maybe 5-on-5 is a little bit of a detriment in his game, but I think maybe that's an unfair moniker because of simply the way that he was used in Philadelphia, more specifically used on a role on the wing, because they were overloaded at the center position. So I think they're going to give him a shot as perhaps one of those top two center rise positions with Paul Stastny, obviously. And it's yet to be determined who they're going to look at him with. But I think Mike Yeo is really going to give him an opportunity to play with top notch players there in the middle. And so don't be surprised if you see him get some looks with the Vladimir Tarasenko or somebody like Jaden Schwartz. Obviously you have to see if the chemistry fits there. But Doug Armstrong, when I talked to him after that trade, also mentioned Braden Schenn's character. He comes with high character value, and that's something that Ron Hextall stressed to Doug Armstrong, that he's going to be a good guy in your locker room and a vocal leader. That's somebody that a lot of the players are going to be impressed with. And Doug Armstrong made mention of that Ryan Reeves, not only what he brings on the ice, but he was a very high character guy in the Blues locker room, and he didn't think he would make that trade with Pittsburgh unless they were getting that high character guy and Braden Schenn coming back to replace that. So a lot of components there that the Blues do like, and obviously, having 3 years of term left on his contract is something that they valued. And, Jori Lehterä had a pretty high AAV there, and considering, the way that his season went last year was a bit of a disappointment, the Blues were perhaps looking to, take that salary off the books, and they found a trade partner there and somebody that they feel like is only going to get better as time goes on, and he's just getting into the prime years of his career.
Lou, with Colton Parayko signing the 5-year deal, the Blues now have 9 players signed through the 2019-2020 season. Paul Stastny, though, only has 1 year left on his contract at $7 million a year. Are you expecting the Blues to re-sign Paul Stastny and make that 10 contracts through the 2019-20 season?
That's a good question, and something as training camp approaches here, that's something we'll have to broach with Doug Armstrong and how they feel about it. And I know Paul loved his time here in St. Louis, obviously grew up here, as a youngster, and especially as his dad, Peter, finished out his NHL career here in St. Louis. So it's going to be an interesting situation. Paul's shown, obviously, good flashes of play during his time here, during his 3 years, but there's also been some injuries that have sidelined him as well. And when you're a guy that's making $7 million AAV, you're going to be looked upon to do big things. And I know from a fan's perspective that sometimes you view that as, hey, you're going to have to produce more than what you have. And I know maybe just in black and white, the numbers don't necessarily maybe add up to what the AAV is there for him, but he's another one that's, a high character guy on this team and in the locker room, and brings many intangibles that the Blues have been really happy with. So, he's a great face-off guy, a good power play guy to have. So there's many components there that they like about his game, but that is going to be an interesting situation to see how that plays out, if they feel like the Paul Stastny is going to be in the future plans of this team.
Well, Lou, speaking of future plans of this team, what is the plan for 31st pick overall, Klim Kloston and St. Louis this season?
You know, they're going to give him a look in training camp and see what he brings. I mean, obviously there's an element of the unknown there because he played so few games last year after having the shoulder injury, and he came into prospect camp this year, and he was very impressive during some of the things that he did, and he made it quite clear that, you know, as a young player, he's very confident in his abilities, and you know, but he made it quite clear that it's AHL or NHL for him, and I think they're going to give him that opportunity and to see how he's going to be able to perform. Obviously, the prospects camp in Traverse City is going to be big for him. It's probably going to be his first action. He wasn't clear to participate in any of the scrimmaging during the prospects camp at the end of June and into July. And but, you know, the skill is certainly there. The size is certainly there. And that's certainly a player that they coveted. And one of the reasons, you know, they felt like they needed to get back into the first round because he had slipped so far in the first round. The teams were shying away because of the injury and because of, obviously, the Russian factor, and you just don't know if he's going to come over to North America right away. But, you know, he was highly ranked, obviously, in the Central Scouting Report, the number one ranked European skater out there. So it's obviously a project for the Blues and one that they felt like when he was still on the board, he was a player that they definitely wanted to go out and get. And this is certainly going to be interesting the way things develop and progress with him, and I'm certainly looking forward to seeing it myself.
Lou, is Robbie Fabbri going to be healthy for the start of training camp?
Doug Armstrong says yes, and he's actually come along a lot quicker than maybe they thought. And, you know, obviously a youth factor plays into that role, but coming off of a, you know, serious ACL injury there, but he was actually even towards the end of the playoffs there a couple of times, was just able to get on the ice a little bit and just skate around, not do too much, but no setbacks thus far, and they certainly feel like he is on target for training camp and should be 100% and good to go whenever things kick off in September.
Lou, last question for you. The Blues have a top six defense that is quite enviable for a lot of teams in the league, but that's all they have. They only have six defensemen under an NHL contract right now. Is that a sign that Jordan Schmaltz, former 2012 first-round draft pick, that this is going to be his opportunity to maybe break into that St. Louis Blues defense this season after spending the last 2 years in the AHL with the Chicago Wolves?
Yeah, he's going to get a big chance, and one of the guys that Doug Armstrong mentioned, Vince Dunn being another one. You've got Petteri Lindbom that's also had time in the NHL, but Jordan Schmaltz got a chance at the end of last year to, you know, showcase himself a little bit, and obviously, you know, being a 2012 number one pick, you know, excuse me, you're certainly in that time frame of, you know, it's you need to show something here, and you know, this is going to be his opportunity to kind of break through and maybe get a permanent position here. And I know he's certainly looking forward to doing that. He was in the lineup for game one in that series, in that first round series against Minnesota last year. And, you know, obviously some growing pains in that game and there, but it was some good experience for him to get into some NHL games last year. There were flashes of good play, and obviously there were some flashes where, you know, you need to point some things out to him so he can learn. But, you know, he's obviously had some decent runs down in the AHL with the Chicago Wolves, and I just think that it's his time, that if he wants to jump up and get one of those top seven spots, this is going to be as good a time for him as any.
Lou Korak is the St. Louis Blues correspondent for NHL.com. He's a frequent guest on this program. Lou, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. When we come back, we're going to discuss the decision to allow players on one-way AHL contracts to go represent for their country in the upcoming Olympics. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Here's a pass in the slot. Kostopoulos goes to the backhand and walks in front. Shoots that score! Tom Kostopoulos! Peterson was trying to get the pass from Kostopoulos. What a move by Kostopoulos! Shoots that score! Tom Kostopoulos!
Back behind the net.
So you might be wondering, why did we just play some Tom Kostopoulos highlights? because that's sort of a random thing to play on a Winnipeg-based radio show, hockey radio show. And that's because Tom Kostopoulos, by virtue of being on a AHL-only contract, is a contender to play for Team Canada at the upcoming South Korean Olympics.
Tommy Kostopoulos popped in 24 goals last year.
In the AHL.
Yeah.
I know. He's 38.
That's still impressive.
Look, he's 38 years old. He's had a tremendous AHL career. He's had some stints in the NHL. I think, he's not he had a 630 games in the NHL, so he's definitely bounced between the A and the N over the course of his career.
Yeah, played early part of his career with the Pens.
Right. But as I mentioned, the AHL and the different Olympic committees have all decided that AHL-only contracts, players on AHL-only contracts, are going to be eligible to leave their teams and play at the upcoming Olympics. And as a Canadian, he would be a potential candidate to play for Team Canada in the upcoming Olympics. Do you like this decision? Dave, you follow the AHL more than Ezzy and I do. I mean, you're at every single Moose game, broadcasting a number of them alongside Mitch Peacock, of course. What are your thoughts about a player who's on an AHL-only contract leaving their AHL team to represent their country potentially at the upcoming Olympics?
I mean, I think if they're going to allow them to do it and the teams say that it's fine to go and represent your country, I think that the players will be overjoyed at the opportunity. I mean, is it going to be the NHL? No. Is it going to have the same sort of impact that the NHL will have? Of course not. But, for any player who has that opportunity, and one of the players mentioned in some of the articles is Patrice Cormier, who's, the captain he was the captain last year. I'm assuming he'll still be the captain this year. Signed a new deal with the Manitoba Moose recently. And he's a player who could go over there and represent Team Canada. And, if you talk to a player like Patrice Cormier, who's represented his country previously, it's a great opportunity for someone like that to kind of get a chance to throw on the Canadian jersey, something that, most likely wasn't going to happen. And, we've talked about, some of the other players, like a Jacob McFlicker type, who we've had on the show after the Spengler Cup, would be able to have an opportunity to go and represent his country. So I think it's probably the best option available, considering that the NHL players are not an option.
And, Hockey Canada has already said that they're going to name their team later this summer or early fall, I believe. And, you mentioned the Spengler Cup, Dave. The majority of Team Canada's players and the majority of Team USA's players will still come from the European leagues. But as far as I'm concerned, Drew, what this does is this levels the playing field a little bit with the Continental Hockey League and some of the other leagues in Europe, the Swedish League, the Swiss League, because now, and it doesn't apply to players that are on two-way deals.
Not yet, right? At least. There's still some discrepancy that it could potentially, they could open it up a little bit wider, but right now it sounds like it's just
right.
The only thing we know for sure is that it's only for AHL guaranteed
right.
contracts.
So Kyle Connor and Jack Roslovic, for example, to my knowledge, can't play for Team USA, right?
Today they cannot.
Right.
That's correct.
So if everything stays the same, right now you're talking about career AHLers at this point in their careers, right? So Patrice Cormier, Tom Kostopoulos, there's been other guys thrown out there, like a guy like Darren Archibald could play for Team Canada. So when you're talking about these players, I mean, these aren't going to be similar caliber players as guys that you're used to seeing in the Olympics, right? But what this does is just gives Hockey Canada some more options. Like, as far as I'm concerned, most likely you're only probably going to see a handful of guys from the AHL play for Team Canada. So my best guess would be maybe three guys, four, maybe five guys come out of the American Hockey League. That's just because I think that there are better options in the European leagues. And I think Hockey Canada's already made up their mind when you're talking about certain players. Like, when you're talking about a guy like Jacob McFlicker, he was obviously really good in the Spengler Cup, but there's other players that represented Team Canada, former Manitoba Moose, Mason Raymond, a guy like Nick Spaulding, Gregory Campbell, Andrew Ebbett. These are guys who played for Canada at the Spengler Cup. And on defense, you're talking about guys like Brandon Gormley, Sean Heschka, another former Manitoba Moose, Che Genoway, who's from Morden, Mark Flood. Also, a lot of former Manitoba Moose here, by the way, guys. But a guy like Mark Flood could very well represent Team Canada at the Olympics. So I think you're still going to see the majority of the players come from the European leagues, right? Mm-hmm. Swiss League, the Swedish League, leagues like this. But it's just nice for a guy like Patrice Cormier. Now he has the potential to play at the Olympics, right? So I think this is only good for fans, really.
Really?
Look, well, don't get me wrong, Drew. I mean, I think fans would prefer the NHL to be participating in the Olympics, but at the very least...
Are you going to wake up at 4 a.m. for these games?
I will.
Do you think the average...
But you know me, Drew. I'm a hardcore hockey fan. Yeah, I'll watch anything. I'll watch...
You're nuts.
You know, I'll watch midget AAA hockey.
You're nuts. So do you think the average casual hockey fan or casual Canada booster is going to wake up at 4 a.m. to watch these guys play? And no disrespect to these guys. I want to make that perfectly clear that I'm not disrespecting these guys. They've had tremendous hockey careers, and this is an opportunity that they should embrace wholeheartedly to wear the Canada jersey, the Canada logo on their jersey, and all the power to them. But do you put any weight, any stock into this tournament whatsoever?
Well, if you're asking me personally, I do, but you could ask a group of 10 different hockey fans and you'll probably get some varied answers, right, Drew? But when you're talking about this tournament, I think there is going to be a different dynamic. And when you're talking about NHL players participating in the Olympics, of course, the ratings for this tournament would be better if you had Steven Stamkos and Sidney Crosby and Drew Doughty as opposed to the players we've already talked about, right? So I don't think the ratings are going to be as good as they would have been with NHL players, but I do like the fact that this tournament is now completely wide open. There was criticism from Canadian hockey fans that the Canadian team was too dominant, and that's why they didn't like the Olympics. So you look at this tournament, who's the favorite? I don't think there is a clear-cut favorite.
Because who cares? That would be my response to that question from you, and it's a legitimate question.
Well, I think the reason why you care is because hockey is the sport we all love, and you're still competing for your country in a gold medal. I mean, why care about skeet shooting?
Because the best skeet shooters in the world are competing in the Olympics. These are not the best hockey players
in
the world.
They're still really good hockey players.
Agreed. They're really good hockey players. I don't have an argument with them about hockey players, but if the Olympics are... to some extent supposed to be the best of the best, or at least Olympic hockey had been the best of the best. Now you're talking about the very good of the very good who aren't in the NHL.
Right, right. And I mean, that's the NHL's fault for not coming to an agreement with the IOC and the IIHF, right? I mean, that's not the fault of these guys that are going to represent their countries.
No, it's not their fault whatsoever. I'm not blaming the players. I'm just saying that it does take away from the luster of what used to be a marquee event on the calendar every four years.
Oh, I agree. I'm not going to disagree with that.
I think your point, Drew, is that most people that aren't hardcore like Ez mm-hmm. will not be up at 4 o'clock. What they'll do is they'll say, okay, Team Canada played last night. I'll watch the highlights tomorrow.
Yeah.
And that's realistically what you're going to get. So I don't think that the NHL particularly cares because they've already made the decision not to go to the Olympics. Mm-hmm. And it will impact the ratings. But again, ultimately, that's kind of it. So, will people be up and will they be having parties for the gold medal game if Canada's not in it? Maybe not. But, you know, I just think like it definitely diminishes it. But there's still going to be a segment of people who will be up and watching and excited about it.
The segment we just had was brought to you by Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. When we come back, we talk to John Mattis of Post Media Network. He had a fascinating article about what it's been like for Jim Peck to build the South Korean hockey program from scratch. We continue with our Olympic conversation. That's coming up next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now. Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us via text in studio. Send your messages to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news, that's IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program John Mattis. John is with the Post Media Network. He joins us to discuss his recent article about what it's been like for Jim Peck to build the South Korean Olympic hockey team or the South Korean National Men's Hockey Program. John, good morning and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, good morning, guys. How's the weather in Winnipeg?
The weather in Winnipeg, a little bit
it's
rainy
snowing.
It's snowing. A little bit rainy this morning, but I think the weather report is for the rain to move out and the sunny skies to move in.
That sounds similar to Toronto, so I think we're on the right page here.
Well, there you go. Probably a little less smoggy here than it is down in Toronto, but that's okay. I mean, hopefully good weather in the cards for both of us in these two fair cities.
John, Drew isn't a meteorologist, but he'll take a look.
That's true. I'll take a look at the weather.
Okay, we'll report back, please.
Okay. At the end, I'll run outside in the middle of the interview, see what it's like, and I'll report back at the end of the interview. How's that?
Sounds great.
John, obviously we brought you on to talk about your article in the Post Media Network, National Post, and the various Sun newspapers. We'll tweet it out as well from our Twitter feed, @IllegalCurve. You know, you talked to Jim Peck about what it's like to build the South Korean national men's hockey program. You know, as a takeaway from the article, you know, you're starting from scratch if you're Jim Peck, more or less. I mean, sure, they had some infrastructure in place, but they now have the priority of having an Olympic hockey team with the upcoming 2018 games. How do you think he's embraced the experience of building this team from relative scratch?
I think he's kind of written a book on how to do it properly, so to speak, because he's taken, you know, such an optimistic view at the situation and also sort of a fearless view. I asked him, you know, you go to the Olympics, what satisfies you? What sort of result makes you happy? And he says, if we win everything. So he's not, you know, laying down for the Canadas, the Czech Republics, the Switzerlands. That's who's in their group. He's not laying down and letting them sort of walk all over them. So he has that aspect. And then he has the team building aspect, which has a lot to do with optimism, and has a lot to do with structure and just getting this kind of misfit group of guys together and you know, somehow, you know, icing a competitive team. And they've seen their ranking in the IIHF skyrocket over the last few years under Jim. So, you know, they're doing something right. Don't exactly expect them to win a game in South Korea, but if they can maybe, you know, challenge Switzerland to a 1-0 loss or something, that would be a huge win in my opinion. And I think Jim, you know, deep down would probably be happy with that too.
You know, John, in the article, it talks about Jim saying that the biggest challenge that the Korean team faces is changing the mentality and the culture. And then you mentioned also giving them that structure. Through your conversations with him, how is he trying to do that?
He's basically trying to just sort of start from scratch. You know, I try to compare it to Sam Hinkie and with the Philadelphia 76ers, the former GM there, and how he did sort of a scorched earth rebuild. I know that it's not a perfect comparison because it's the NBA and it's international hockey. There's a lot of differences there. But I brought that up to Jim, and he goes, yeah, I see the similarities because it's about the process. It's about starting from scratch and finding these players, having your core group of players, and working on them, you know, one by one in terms of getting them to the right stage in their career, which he's hoping everyone climaxes at the Olympics. And a big part of that is he said when he got there, guys were playing hockey. They're decent players, but they were all playing individually. There's no sort of actual team structure in terms of systems or even just the mentality. Guys were going out there thinking, I want to score 2 goals, and they didn't care about winning. So he tried to take kind of the individual part of it out of their game and focused on ways that they can win as a team.
John, how has South Korea really kind of risen to the point to be now probably the top Asian hockey producing community out there?
I think a bit of it that we can't kind of ignore is that they have recruited some Canadians and some other players from other countries, like their goalie. He was drafted by the Bruins. He's from Clinton, Ontario, which is, I believe, near Sarnia, kind of Windsor area. And, you know, it's not like they're doing this in an illegal way. These guys have passports in Korea. They're allowed to play for the team. But he's definitely kind of gone off the beaten trail and found a couple of ringers, you could say. And he kind of had to. I mean, this is a country that is not a hockey country by any means. They have 2,000 registered hockey players, and I'm talking men's, women's, boys, girls. Beer leaguers have to be registered. That's like the absolute most amount of people that are playing is 2,000. And then you trim that down to guys that are eligible and that are decent at hockey, and it's about a pool of 100 that he's had to choose from. So if you look at it that way, as much as there's improvement, there's still a really long way to go in terms of promotion within the country in terms of awareness. And obviously the Olympics will be a huge stepping stone for them in terms of locally getting that media coverage, people going out to games. So it's all sort of part of the process, you know, these little stepping stones or baby steps.
John Mattis is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. John wrote an article for Post Media Network talking about Jim Peck and his quest to turn South Korea into a quote-unquote, or maybe a quasi-hockey powerhouse ahead of the 2018 Olympics. John, we were just talking about this last segment. Obviously, the NHLers aren't going to be in South Korea. The AHL is going to let players go that are on AHL-only contracts. You know, has that, the lack of NHL players in South Korea, maybe taken a little of the luster away from Jim Peck and the job that he's trying to do? Or is that sort of just out of sight, out of mind for him as he prepares his players?
Yeah, I asked him about that, and he basically said, you know, it would be nice to have the NHLers there from a promotion perspective, or just, you know, figuring out how his team stacks up against the very best in the world. But I think overall, I mean, if he wants to have a decent tournament in terms of wins and losses, the more NHLers not going, the better, so to speak. And with the whole NHLers going to South Korea topic, I don't know if it's a closed book, because I don't know. We've seen the NHL do this before, where last minute they decide to do something. Or, you know, if you think of the World Cup of Hockey, that was put together very last minute. You think of the Vegas expansion draft. They were still figuring out the rules, you know, a month or two before. Like, it's just the league that really flies on the seat of their pants for a lot of big events. And, you know, it ends up working out well. The World Cup of Hockey was great. But at the same time, there's a time where, or a deadline, so to speak, an unofficial one, where you run out of time to organize, to get the schedule right. So I wouldn't say it's a closed book, but, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at the same time if Gary Bettman and the NHLPA decide to somehow go to South Korea.
John, you mentioned earlier South Korea has gone from 33rd in the international rankings to now they're ranked 18th in the world. What's next? Does Jim Peck think that he can make South Korea a top 15 or top 12 international hockey nation? Is there even a chance that this team 4 to 8 years from now maybe challenges for an Olympic spot in a year where they don't host the tournament?
I don't think it's a crazy idea. I don't know if he's looking that far ahead. I did not ask him about that, but if you look at the countries that they're hanging out with now at the 18th spot, I mean, it's like the Kazakhstans, the Italys, the Ukraines. Like, these aren't exactly hockey powers, and there are a lot of countries that haven't really moved up the rankings to a great degree, right? I mean, Kazakhstan and Italy, we always see them as sort of, you know, getting delegate or getting relegated, getting promoted. Like, they're sort of always in that limbo. So if Jim can somehow find a way to hang with the big boys and not get completely crushed and not get relegated, then that's a huge win. And you sort of build off that. I mean, this sort of thing doesn't happen overnight. Let's look at Switzerland, for example. They're right in there as a top 10 nation now, but 10 years ago, they didn't really have many NHLers. They were sort of, you know, one of those teams that would come into the tournament and maybe steal a win, but really they were easy fodder for the big nations. So, I mean, it's a huge undertaking. I think they're focused on the South Korean Olympics, and then I guess they reset from there.
And John, mine's a bit of a takeoff from that is, you know, as you often see with these sorts of tournaments, you have to create an infrastructure to kind of get that base of players so you're not trying to draw from all over the world. You can actually get some homegrown talent. So will this tournament, or will that sort of situation of creating that infrastructure be contingent on this tournament? Or, as you somewhat touched on, will they just kind of continue it and then, you know, maybe go look at Beijing next and then, you know, for forthcoming Olympics?
Yeah, I think it's sort of a snowball effect, and obviously they'd like their local numbers to be higher. I mean, 2,000, and you're counting every single hockey player in the country of 44 million. I mean, that's nothing. That's barely, you know, a dot on the map. So I think that the Olympics will help exponentially, and I think having a guy like Richard Park, who is a former NHLer, as Jim's kind of right-hand man, having those two guys as the face, I mean, It doesn't really get much better than that. The first and second Korean NHLers ever. So when you have that sort of support at the top, good things will happen. And you know, it's a lot of sort of grassroots work that needs to be done in terms of hockey schools and getting the, like you said, the infrastructure is huge. We take it for granted in Canada where there's leagues everywhere, there's rinks everywhere. South Korea's kind of got to start from the bottom. They have a few rinks, but they got to create that culture, and I think it starts next February.
John, getting away from South Korea here for a second, you're based in Toronto, obviously. What did you think of the moves the Leafs made in the offseason, signing Patrick Marleau, Ron Hainsey, and Dominic Moore?
I thought overall Lou Lamoriello, the GM, played it fairly safe this summer. I think the Leafs really wanted Travis Hamonic, who ended up going to the Flames. So they don't get that right-handed defenseman that they covet. But Patrick Marleau, I'm sort of on the fence with that deal. If the Leafs take a step forward, as a lot of people expect next season, and continue sort of their upward trajectory, I think it's a good deal in terms of how much they're paying Marleau and what he can bring in the short term. I think, though, where the contract becomes kind of fuzzy or puzzling is the third year of Marleau's contract. Where they're going to have issues with cap space, with their youngsters needing deals. So that deal was sort of, I could see it going both ways. But overall, I think Lamoriello is making the right choice, kind of not necessarily going all in, but definitely pressing the go button on actually trying to contend. And then Ron Hainsey, I don't know if he was the piece they really wanted, but the defense market was not great. They say he's going to play top 4 minutes. We'll see what happens as the season progresses. And then Dominic Moore, a bit of a downgrade on Brian Boyle at center last season in terms of the fourth line. But he's a capable NHLer, and I don't think it's a poor signing. It's just when you compare it to Boyle, it's not exactly the same. So I don't know. The Leafs didn't make huge splashes. They signed some RFAs, which obviously is, it's huge and part of their future. But I think playing it safe, at least to an extent, was probably the right move for Lamoriello.
John Mattis is with the Post Media Network. John, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us to talk about your article on the South Korean Olympic men's hockey program.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Our pleasure. Take care, John. When we come back, we look around the NHL. Number of signings have taken place. We talk about them next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Yeah, it's kind of a different process, especially for me. It's my first time going through it all, and it's one of those things where you kind of have each side as a viewpoint, and it's a situation where you both want to meet in fair territory, and obviously you want to go and be part of a competitive team and things like that. So the conversation was, it's funny how you talk all summer, and then all of a sudden it kind of leans down on 20 minutes, and but no, I'm just, the main thing is I'm super excited that everything worked out, and I'm going to be a part of the St. Louis Blues.
That's St. Louis Blues defenseman Colton Parayko, the former third-round pick, is much wealthier than he was at the start of the week. He signed a 5-year, $27.5 million contract extension, average annual value of $5.5 million for the next 5 seasons. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So Colton Parayko gets paid, as I mentioned, 5 years, $27.5 million, $5.5 million per season. Had 35 points for the St. Louis Blues last season, 33 points for the Blues the season before. Sort of coming out of, not nowhere, but a little relative nowhere, a bit of a late bloomer, didn't sign his entry-level deal until he was 22 years of age, just turned 24 this past May, former third-round pick. Your thoughts on the term and the length and the dollar value of the deal, is this legitimate, you know, a good number for both sides in your mind?
Yeah, I think it's good for both sides. I was a little bit surprised that he didn't sign for more years, to be honest with you. And when you look at the St. Louis Blues defense, I think there are a lot of people that are looking at the St. Louis Blues and that defense without Kevin Shattenkirk and using that as a reason why they might fall out of a playoff spot this year, but I just don't see it. And when you talk about their top pair, it's been Jay Bouwmeester and Alex Pietrangelo for how many years now, Drew, right? And that was a pairing for Mike Babcock at the Winter Olympics as well. I mean, that is a top five, top pairing, as far as I'm concerned, all day long. And when you talk about Joel Edmondson and Colton Parayko, that's one of the best second pairings in the NHL. So I think it's a really good contract for the St. Louis Blues. You could argue that Colton Parayko should be making $6-plus million a year. And this was a guy who represented Team North America at the World Cup of Hockey. And I think Colton Parayko is a little bit underrated, and maybe that's because he plays behind Alex Pietrangelo, who in my opinion is a top 10 defenseman in the NHL. But when you're talking about Parayko, how many guys that are 6 foot five, 6 foot six move like he does, right? And this is a guy who's good defensively and he can contribute offensively. He's not a guy that's necessarily going to score 20 goals ever in the NHL. And you mentioned he's a bit of a late bloomer. I'm a big fan of his game. And maybe if you're Colton Parayko, you don't sign for those extra 2 or 3 years because maybe you think that after those 5 years, you can really cash in.
Yeah, get another contract.
Yeah, because you're going to be, what, 28, 29 years old at that point?
Yeah, he'd be closer to 29 or 30, around there. But
right, yeah. So maybe that's the reason why you don't sign that. Or if you're the St. Louis Blues, you know that if you sign him to 7 years, you're probably going to have to pay him more on an average annual value because you're eating up those UFA years, right, Drew? So, right. I mean, it's a great contract. And, I mean, we talked to Lou Korak about this last hour. I mean, the St. Louis Blues have been a fierce division rival of the Winnipeg Jets for many years now, and that's not going to change, Dave. And even though this team, you could say, well, where are they going? Are they kind of middling? Are they still a Stanley Cup contender? As far as I'm concerned, I wouldn't bet on the St. Louis Blues not being a playoff team. I'm not saying that they're a top team in the league, but when you're talking about that defense, Bouwmeester, Pietrangelo, Parayko, Edmondson, even guys on that third pairing, Carl Gunnarsson and Robert Bortuzzo, they're big, they're mobile, they can score. Very tough team to play against. And when you're talking about Mike Yeo, now he's got the team for a year, and how big of an impact is Ken Hitchcock's departure going to have? I mean, we could argue that all day long, but I still think this is a very good team, and defense is their strength.
Dave, 35 points in 81 games gives Parayko the $5.5 million per season for the next 5 years. Look at Jacob Trouba. He had 33 points in 60 games for the Winnipeg Jets. I think it's becoming even more crystal clear that if Jacob Trouba is to sign a long-term deal with the Jets, the number's going to start with a 6 and could go even as high as a 7.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's going to go as high as a 7, but I think that it's definitely in that upper 5 if you're the Jets, but most likely a 6. Starting with a 6, and that makes sense. I mean, look what you have in Jacob Trouba. You have a guy who's going to eat up minutes. He's going to play your power play. He can play penalty kill. He can pretty much do everything. He's going to quarterback things for you. He's got great vision out there. He's nasty. He's got a nasty side. He's an aggressive player on the ice. The guys like him in the room. So he's a player that you're going to want to, again, we talked about it earlier in the show. He's a guy that is going to command a big ticket from either the Jets or whatever team he plays for next. So, yeah, he's definitely, he and his agency group are definitely looking at all these contracts that are being signed and thinking about their comparables and cashing in.
Two signings for the Ottawa Senators this past week. J.G. Pageau gets 3 years and $9.3 million, an average annual value of $3.1 million. And Ryan Zingel gets 2 years, $3.6 million. That's
one of the best names in hockey.
Yes, an average annual value of $1.8 million. Good signings. I mean, sort of just, both players were arbitration eligible, didn't get that far. Numbers were exchanged. They came to a middle ground. All sides happy, figure in those with those contracts.
Yeah, and J.G. Pageau made himself some money in the playoffs. He had that 4-goal game and scored 8 goals in the playoffs. These are depth players for the Ottawa Senators, but they're depth players that could play top 6 roles if needed, right? And what I mean by that is these guys aren't necessarily going to be, 30-goal guys who you put out on the first power play, but they have that versatility, right? Kind of similar to like an Andrew Kopp. And J.G. Pageau, I would say, has a higher offensive ceiling than a guy like Andrew Kopp. He scored 33 points last year, had a career-high 43 points a couple of years ago, but he's a very valuable player, a guy that plays center, but he can also play the wing. You can put him out there on the PK, very fast, shifty player. Mm-hmm. So I think the JG Pageau signing is a little bit more significant, but Ryan Dzingel is a guy who's kind of come into his own a little bit later than some and proved to be a valuable player in the bottom six for the Ottawa Senators. So, I mean, these are nice signings, and when you're talking about the Senators, the thing that still concerns me the most, Drew, is losing Mark Methot. And I think, you know, Mark Methot was, it was a little bit surprising that Vegas traded him to Dallas.
Especially for the not very extensive return they got.
Well, Mark Methot, you know, you forget, he plays with Erik Karlsson, but he provides that steady defensive presence because, as we know, Erik Karlsson is the best puck-rushing defenseman in the league. Mm-hmm. And I think he's underrated in terms of what he did. You look at what the Ottawa Senators did in the playoffs last year. Did the Ottawa Senators go that far without Mark Methot? I don't think they do.
Hard to believe that they, I mean, as good as Erik Karlsson was, you're right, Methot just provided them that stability. So if you take away that stability...
He's an excellent defensive defenseman.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to confuse Mark Methot with Paul Coffey. But this is a guy that instantly makes Dallas's defense better. Mm-hmm. And I'm just surprised that Ottawa didn't make more of an effort to keep him. And I realize there are salary implications and all of that. But, I mean, you're not going to be able to replace him in your lineup. I realize a guy like Cody Ceci's been good and all of that. And Dion Phaneuf, they're able to keep him. But as far as I'm concerned, Methot is better than both of those guys.
As solid as Methot is defensively, I think it's almost the confidence that he also gives to Erik Karlsson to know that Karlsson can freelance because he's got Methot behind him. The loss of that is almost as extensive as the loss of the player himself. It is an interesting dilemma that the Ottawa Senators are going to be faced with this coming season. Dave Thomas Tatar, he gets 4 years, $21.2 million from the Detroit Red Wings. Average annual value of $5.3 million. That's the same AAV that Andre Palat got from the Tampa Bay Lightning. You like that contract for the Detroit Red Wings? He had 25 goals last season and had 21 assists for 46 points.
I do. I mean, he played up with Henrik Zetterberg and Anthony Mantha up on the top line for the Red Wings, and he's a player who likes Detroit. The Red Wings probably, he's 26 years old. He'll be 30 when the contract's up. It's a probably a little bit more AAV that they were anticipating paying, but they got the shorter term, so that's probably a good thing for a player who you're still trying to decide what exactly you're getting with Thomas Tatar. But I know the Red Wings like him. I know the organization really likes what he brings to them. And I think that Ken Holland, again, got this deal done with a player who probably could have had for a little more term. But instead, again, you pay a little bit more money. You get the term you like. You can play up on your top line with a guy like Henrik Zetterberg, with Anthony Mantha. And I think, you know, this is a move that Detroit had to make because they needed the scoring, and you had to get a guy like Thomas Tatar into the fold.
Yeah, when you have a player who was third on your team in scoring and you're having trouble scoring goals, I mean, last year, guys, we saw it with numerous players struggling to score goals, whether it was Dylan Larkin, who took a bit of a step back. And sure, Dylan Larkin was only in his second year in the NHL, so he was bound to struggle a little bit. But you go up and down the roster, guys like Justin Abdelkader, Darren Helm, they struggled big time. Sure, they also had injury problems, but I don't think this Red Wings team is going to be a playoff team next year. But when you're talking about Tatar, you just had to sign
him. He's a cornerstone.
Right, and if he goes to arbitration, Drew, he signs a one-year deal.
Right.
And then he's going to become a UFA, right? So I don't think you want to have that happen. So Ken Holland did a nice job here. Thomas Tatar is one of the most dynamic offensive players on this team. But to me, this defense is just still not good enough. And I like the acquisition of Trevor Daley, but I don't necessarily know the Red Wings have done enough in the offseason to make them a playoff team. Because as we know, that Eastern Conference is stacked.
One last signing. This happened just this morning. Brandon Manitoba's Jordan Martinook avoids arbitration with the Arizona Coyotes. Signs a two-year, $3.6 million contract. An average annual value of $1.8 million.
Yeah, and that's good for him. Second rounder of the Arizona Coyotes. And, you know, For a Coyotes team, we know how young they're going to be. Martinook at 24 years old, it's almost going to be a veteran of that team with guys like Max Domi and Dylan Strome on that team. So, you know, he had a good year last year, and he gets rewarded with a nice contract.
When we come back, our very good friend Amanda Stein joins us from Montreal. She covers the Montreal Canadiens for TSN 690. She also covers the New Jersey Devils. We'll explain when we come back. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Bottom of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
It's quite fitting that this segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, as our next guest is desperately searching for Judd Apatow tickets at Just for Laughs tonight. Amanda, any luck in finding those tickets?
No, not yet. I found some that are, you know, way, way too expensive for my my radio budget, but hopefully I'll find some. He's not actually tonight. He's in a couple days, so I have a few days to figure it out and hopefully beg online for someone to give me tickets.
Well, it's good to see that you're not above begging online for
absolutely
tickets.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Use the power of social media to your benefit. And Amanda, before we get into the hockey talk, we're less than a month away from Ezzy's wedding. Do you know when you arrive into Winnipeg and what you're wearing to as Dave's date for the event?
Well, I'm happy to come. I'm definitely happy to come to the event. I need an official invite, but I definitely have something to wear. I definitely know how I do my hair. I can do my makeup. And so all I need is an official invite and know exactly what day I'm supposed to be there.
Well, Amanda, I'll talk to Naomi because she's handling it through paperless post. So that's no problem.
Okay, listen, I'm that type of person. I will show up. I will.
Well, we saw that because anybody who follows you on Instagram, and we certainly recommend you do that on Twitter and on Instagram, saw that you weren't just necessarily the Montreal Canadiens reporter recently. You were down in the swamp in Jersey. You were covering New Jersey Devils rookie camp. How did that come about that you all of a sudden became a Devils reporter?
It was definitely a little strange. I think it caught some of my Twitter followers off guard, but essentially, they needed a reporter for their development camp, and they called me up and asked me if I would come down for the week and do it for them. I think, you know, having the number one pick in the draft this year, Nico Hischier, they wanted a little more attention. And the people at TSN 690 where I work were really wonderful and allowed me to go do that. And I had a really, really great time. It's definitely different covering a team that I haven't covered ever, really, other than when they've come to Montreal. It was a lot of work, but a lot of fun as well, and cool to be a part of.
Well, let's get back into the Montreal Canadiens, because that's obviously why we brought you on, to talk about their offseason. And offseason priority number one for the Canadiens was getting Carey Price under contract. Mission accomplished for Marc Bergevin. It's an 8-year, $84 million contract. You know, regardless of whatever else happens with the Canadiens this offseason, and there were certainly some disappointments, losing Radulov to the Dallas Stars, for example, does getting Carey Price under that long-term deal make everything else sort of acceptable to the Habs fans?
I think they're two separate entities. I really don't think that people, you know, put it in perspective because they're Habs fans, and it's definitely, no, perspective is a hard one sometimes, of the fact that they lost Radulov, but everything's okay because Carey Price is locked up. I think they're two very different mindsets. I think everyone's really happy to have Carey Price locked up, and certainly as a reporter, certainly as someone who covers this team on a daily basis, it's nice to know that we're not going to spend the next, you know, year asking him about a contract. That's certainly nice not to have. But I think people in Montreal are very able to compartmentalize, and people are still very upset about losing Radulov, but also happy at the same time for having Carey Price. I don't think one balances out the other. It's just the way people are programmed here, and there's nothing wrong with that. But certainly, you know, if you bring up Carey Price's name, people are happy to know that he's signed. And then you can bring up Radulov's name, and we've gotten callers on TSN 690 saying that they're now deciding to jump ship and be Dallas Stars fans, which is pretty remarkable considering he was here for only a year. And I understand, you know, the type of player that he was and the way he embraced the city, but I can understand the jumping ship and being Nashville Predators fans, but the Dallas Stars thing doesn't quite compute for me.
Amanda, we haven't had you on since July 1st. What did you think of the two big moves that the Habs made in regards to free agency, signing, obviously, Carl Alzner to the 5-year contract and signing Alex Hemsky to the 1-year deal?
So the 1-year deal with Alex Hemsky, I'm never going to get his name right, I think it is a fine move. He's been injury-prone his entire career, really, it seems, and last year dealt with a lot of injury and was able to come back at the end of the year. It's sort of like one of those one-off deals that Mark Bergevin just puts a little bit of hope into. It's a no-risk kind of situation. It's a very manageable contract. So that one, to me, is perfectly fine. The Carl Alzner, I'm very interested in seeing how this is going to work out. It's a lot of money, a lot of term for a player coming out of Washington. And, this year in particular, I think free agents were getting paid a lot more than perhaps they're worth because the class wasn't that popular, let's say, to use a term like that. But they do need help on defense. And it was very, very clear that Mark Bergevin had to do something on their defensive squad. And he was probably one of the best bets available. Kevin Shattenkirk possibly, but I don't think he was ever interested in coming here at all. So I think when they brought in Carl Alzner, they brought him in for a couple of days to visit Montreal to see if he felt like he fit here. And there was a good connection between the two sides. It's going to be very interesting to see how it works out. But certainly now it's looking like, because Andrei Markov hasn't signed, you know, it's looking better and better and better because they're going to need another defenseman down the stretch here if they can't get Markov signed to a deal.
Well, Amanda, you just stole my question. What is going to happen with Andrei Markov? Do you think it's likely that he's worn a Habs jersey for the last time?
Well, I can tell you that yesterday he was wearing a Habs jersey when he was practicing in Florida. So I don't know if he is putting out signals. That's on his social media, is out there. He's been wearing Habs things here and there. This to me is the biggest mystery of all. Now, I've gone on radio stations across our country leading up to free agency, and I'm not afraid to admit it. I was the person who said, I don't think that there'll be any problem getting Andrei Markov signed. It doesn't appear that that's the type of character he is, that he would want to hold out or that he would want to actually leave Montreal, having been here his entire career. So this one, to me, is a huge question mark. I don't really understand what's happening here, other than the fact that he must desperately want those 2 years that no one is willing to give him, that he's willing to wait and see. But the longer he waits, the more, you know, power Bergevin has in his hand, or more, you know, the pendulum sways to Mark Bergevin's favor, because we're getting closer and closer now to training camp, it seems.
Amanda Stein is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, discussing the Montreal Canadiens offseason. Amanda, obviously Jonathan Drouin coming into Montreal, that was the big acquisition in terms of the trade market. You know, for those of us who aren't in Montreal and can't really relate to it, what is the pressure like on a French-Canadian player who suits up for the Montreal Canadiens? I mean, Jonathan Drouin is going to be the next great French-Canadian player for the Habs. What is the pressure like on his shoulders as he enters the season?
It's immense. Now, I put it in perspective this way. You're not just talking about a first French superstar player, you know, in the last couple of years. You're really talking about the last French, or the first French superstar player since Stéphane Richer, if you can go back that far. That's a long time ago. And if you're looking at the generation, my generation of fans, let's say, or maybe a little bit younger, I'm 31 years old, they grew up without having that guy, without having a French-Canadian player that they can, you know, listen to in their own language and connect to in their own language. We sometimes forget how important it is to be able to connect to people, connect to our athletes. And when you're talking about Montreal and you're talking, not Montreal, but when you're talking about Quebec, you know, in Montreal, most everyone can speak both languages, but you go out of the city, you go further north, you go further east, there's parts of our population that don't speak any English at all. They just don't. And that's okay. And that's their prerogative. So for them to have someone to be able to connect to, not only is that great for the franchise, but it puts ample pressure on Jonathan Drouin. And I'm curious to see what happens when he may go through his first slump. But I think he's going to get a lot of leeway based on what I just talked about, based on the fact that it's been so long that this franchise has been craving a French-Canadian player of his caliber. And I think it's great that he's as young as he is and in the prime of his career, because that means he'll be here for a really long time. And an outstanding guy. I've had the opportunity to interview him a few times. Just a really, really stand-up, mature young man. And so I really hope that things will work out well for him here.
Amanda, now that Alex Radulov is signed with the Dallas Stars as opposed to re-signing with the Montreal Canadiens, how does that change the expectations for Alex Galchenyuk this year?
I've never really thought about it in that perspective. I think, you know, Alex Galchenyuk has just had so much pressure on him as an individual without the idea of Alex Radulov. I think what it does is it puts the pressure on Alexander Galchenyuk to create things on his own. He benefited a lot last year, particularly at the beginning of the year when he had his best line before his knee injury. They were producing at a ridiculous pace together. They had undeniable chemistry. And Alex Galchenyuk was one of the best forwards in the league at that point. And then he sort of tapered off. And now it's going to be up to him to do it himself. I think sometimes players are the benefit of who they play with. And then they have to take on that responsibility themselves. I'm not sure what his maturity level is to be able to do that. And I think that that's a concern that Mark Bergevin, the coaching staff, has had about him. So this is going to be a massive year in his development for him to be able to prove that he can play, not necessarily or without a star guy with him. But you never know, because they may end up changing things. He's a player that can play both wing and center, though they prefer him at the wing. And then you look at someone like Jonathan Drouin, also a guy who plays both wing and center. You might have chemistry between those two young, really brilliant talents. One, unfortunately, you know, doesn't necessarily always bring his best, and that's Galchenyuk, and hopefully they can sort of play off each other this coming year.
So, Amanda, how many phone calls are you getting about the new season ticket charges that the Montreal Canadiens have imposed, and how much of a controversy is it in Montreal right now?
So we had a show yesterday, and people were calling for hours about it. People are very upset, and for those of you who don't know what it is, essentially, in order to have printed season tickets this year, this is only for season ticket holders, to have printed season tickets, you're charged about $157 per seat with another service charge on top of it. So if you have season tickets with two seats, it's roughly $400 extra on top of the price of your tickets. And everyone knows Montreal Canadiens tickets are not cheap by any stretch of the imagination. People are furious. The other option is to have them mobile. And we've had a lot of people call into our station saying that they're of an older generation of fan and that some of them don't have, smartphones, and they like to have their tickets in hand. Some of them collect tickets and things like that. So people are quite upset. And I don't think it's because they're trying to switch from paper to mobile, but it's just the absurd amount of money that it costs to do that. I think people find very unfair. And I'm wondering if it's also an effort to, you know, control a little bit more of the market in terms of who has the tickets and keep them out of scalpers' hands. Because if you think about it, isn't it a little bit more difficult for a scalper to be on the corner and then they've got to send you the email and make sure it's legit and all that stuff? There's a whole service. So I'm wondering if that might be a part of it as well. But I do know people are really upset because you go to the Bell Center, you spend $5 on a bottle of water, $5 on a hot dog, and apparently now $400 to print out your tickets.
Amanda, we have one final question for you here, and it's a very important one. I follow you on Instagram, and I was following along
with your
spray tan posts Instagram video there. So, I was shocked to learn that you spray tan. I thought you were all
it's
natural
true.
There. but my question is, how long does that last, like a spray tan? Does that last a week? Do you have to go weekly? I'm very curious to know.
Oh, well, I'm happy to let you know. So I go to a spa called Barbarella, just shameless plug if you're ever here in Montreal. And it actually lasts a good 2.5 weeks. They do an excellent job. And the really nice thing is that it's all vegan. So it's healthy for your body. It doesn't damage your skin or anything like that. And it takes 5 minutes to do. And I decided to out myself yesterday because I was tired of lying, because I was like, wow, you look so tanned. Where were you? And I didn't always say I was away. But I was like, oh, I don't know, just out and about. And like at one point, I couldn't do it anymore.
Amanda, I'd say we're going to have you on in the, you know, when the season begins again. But after Ezzy's last question, this is clearly the final show of this broadcast. We're
this
done after that,
happening.
Basically. This is it.
Yeah, this is it. I've really worn out my welcome here. I've insulted your fan base before. We've talked about bagels. We've done all these things. But yet, this is the straw that broke the camel's back.
I think Drew would probably get a spray tan, but it would have to be edible. Like, he'd have to be able to lick it off and maybe have a meal out of it or something.
I don't even know what you're talking about. Just stop talking, please, Ezra. Amanda, thank you. We'll see you in about a month here in Winnipeg.
Absolutely. And listen, I get spray tans before I go to weddings, so you'll be able to see it in the flesh, exactly what it looks like. I'll be waiting for my invite.
Okay, that sounds like a plan. We'll take care of that real soon. Thanks, Amanda.
All right, bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. When we come back, Ryan Gladstone's going to talk to us about the Winnipeg Fringe Festival play that he's involved with. We've actually lost all of our power here in the station, so I'm not even sure exactly what's going to happen. That's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. It's about 10 minutes before the top of the hour here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. No computers, but that's not necessary. That's okay. We think we blew a circuit, or the hamster got a little tired from running on the wheels for too long. So we're gonna you know, freelance the rest of the show. We're gonna try and get in touch with the guys who have a fringe show called Hockey Night at the Puck and Pickle Pub. It's a mouthful. Dave saw it last night and recommends it greatly. So we want to talk about those guys and their love of hockey, because we're big boosters of the Winnipeg Fringe Festival here on the program. I should mention that, of course, that this segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. For over 30 years, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's home for deli favorites. Check them out in the Cordon Village Mall. Did you see our Twitter feed? The Blue Jackets fan. This is a weird one. There's a Columbus Blue Jackets fan visiting Winnipeg this week and went to Bernstein's Deli because he heard us talking about the Illegal Curve sandwich for all these years as he was listening to the show either online or via podcast. This Blue Jackets fan from Columbus gives it two thumbs up.
Yeah, good on him. By the way, on the topic of the Fringe Festival,
yeah,
we should give a shout-out to our good friend Benji Rothman,
yes,
who's also in a Fringe play. It's called Nothing in Particular. A bunch of us are going to go check it out tomorrow night.
I see.
So we recommend that you go check it out. Benji is hilarious.
Yes, he's
and
the
I'm
one
sure
he plays fake Drew on this program every now and then.
Yes.
Yeah, so you know, if you ever want to know who fake Drew was, that is Benji Rothman. You can check out his Fringe play this weekend.
Very pumped up to check out Benji's play. The Fringe Festival is a great event. If you've never checked it out, go check it out. And specifically Benji Rothman.
Alrighty, so we are pleased to be joined now by Ryan Gladstone. He is one of the principals in the Fringe play Hockey Night at the Puck and Pickle Pub. Ryan, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Good morning.
We are big fans of the Winnipeg Fringe Festival here on the program. Dave had the opportunity to see the show last night. For our audience, can you sort of give a little rundown what it is besides a show with a very funny and very unique name?
It takes place during the gold medal hockey game of the 2018 Winter Olympics. In this version, of course, the NHL players go. So it's like two guys sitting in a bar drinking beer, watching hockey, and then we sort of also become all the other characters in the bar. So we become like two old guys and two pair of cougars, a couple on a date, and like two super hockey nerds who are competing for superior hockey knowledge. And it's between the game's between the Canadians and the Americans. So there's one table that's like a Canadian and American.
Yeah, well, Ryan, I was actually
nationalistic pride.
I was actually hoping you were going to come on and do the entire interview in your American, accent.
Because
first of all, I didn't know that Americans from Houston is my guess from last night. That was your accent, but
you know what? Yeah, you're right. The accent is more there, but he's from Phoenix. We thought that would be the.
Okay, I figured Southwestern
the
United States.
Market.
Yeah, that's right. You're right. He was a Coyotes fan. I forgot. So good point.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
So how did you guys get into it? Because I have to tell you, I was there with my aunt and my cousin, and everybody, we were laughing the entire time. It was brilliant. So how did you guys come about this idea?
Well, in the show there we play I play Ryan, and my friend John plays John. And in the show, we have that conversation where we're like, man, I've always wanted to do a show about hockey. Yeah, me too. Hey, we should do one. Let's try to come up with something. That's how it happened. We were in Winnipeg during the Fringe one year, and we were like, let's do a show next year. What should it be about? I was like, well, what about hockey? And then we, very much as it happens in the show, we like conceived of the concept and kind of figured it out in little baby steps. The concept originated here in Winnipeg for sure.
And have you been taking this one all over the country, or is it only in the Winnipeg Fringe?
I wrote it 4 years ago. So we actually did it for the Sochi Olympics, and it was Canada versus Russia. And then, you know, the Olympics happened, so we we had to retire it. So, and then 4 years later, I was like, wait, we can bring this thing back. And so we rewrote it and changed the rivalry to Canadian-Americans. And we're doing it here, and then we're doing it in Edmonton as well.
There you go. The show is called Hockey Night at the Puck and Pickle Pub. It's at Venue 14, which is the King's Head. So you can check it out if you're looking to see a terrific Fringe Festival show. All the shows at the Fringe, as I said at the outset, strong supporters of the Winnipeg Fringe Festival. Ryan Gladstone, thank you for joining us, Ryan. Good luck with the rest of the shows at this year's Winnipeg Fringe Festival, and thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure. That's it for the Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thank you to our sponsors, Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, Linden Market Dental Center, and our good friends Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. In case you missed any of this program, it's available on tsn1290.ca and, of course, available for download on iTunes and or your Android device. Big thanks to producer Chris doing a great job behind the board today. For Ezra Ginsberg, for Dave Manouk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.